The feminist theologian Mary Daly once said, "If God is male, then male is God." And the concept of a divine patriarch will oppress women as long as he is allowed to live on in the human imagination. But abandoning a male image of God in our minds is easier said than done. Because all of us have been conditioned to see God over the years as an old white man with a long flowing beard like Zeus, or in one of those paintings by Michelangelo. It's difficult for us to free ourselves from a male image of God in our minds because Jesus was, by all accounts, a man. And like billions of other Americans and others across the world, many of us had that famous Warner Salmon portrait of Jesus that hung on our walls in our homes as children. You know the one where Jesus is turned to the side, looking up, sort of like looking at maybe a bird in a tree or at God in the sky, as if that's where God is. Looking holy with those classic European features, long brown hair shimmering like gold in the angelic light shining down upon his face. And we all know that that is not what a Palestinian Jew from Galilee looked like. But it doesn't make it any easier for us to shake the image of a male God embedded in our heads. Even though Jesus never talked about what it means to be a man, his maleness is still a factor that impacts our image of goodness, godliness. And yet, on the other hand, we find throughout the Gospels Jesus consistently breaking ties with the patriarchy of his day. He refused to take a traditional path laid out for men in society at the time. He did not get married. He did not have any children. And in the first century, a Jewish man who did not have a wife by the age of 30 would have been considered very strange. Also, unlike other Jewish teachers, Jesus had women disciples like Mary Magdalene and others, women who were financing his ministry. He transgressed purity codes and patriarchal laws and gender norms by talking directly to women, which was unheard of at that day, healing women who were sick, praising women for their faith, eating with sex workers, inviting women to anoint his feet, empowering them even to preach the good news of God to their people. Not to mention, without women like his radical mother Mary and the Marys who went to the tomb on Easter morning, we wouldn't know anything about Jesus at all, and there would be no Christianity in the first place. So the question is, how did the story of a man who broke ties with the patriarchy in his day and consistently empowered women become a religion dominated by men that has subjected women for 2,000 years? I know what some of you are thinking. It's Paul's fault. I knew you were thinking that. Well, feminist and womanist scholars in recent years have revealed that Paul was something of a radical egalitarian for his day as well. But yes, people have certainly misused the writings of Paul to oppress women and many others. But it's not just Paul. The Gospels have been misinterpreted and misconstrued as well. So this Lenten season and this Women's History Month, we're looking at the stories of women in the Gospel of Matthew that challenge our assumptions, break down binaries, and help to overturn the patriarchy. In the last year, we've seen some setbacks for women. We've seen women's reproductive rights stripped away by the Supreme Court, setting the fight for gender equality back 50 years. A Pew Research study last year, in 2022, found that women still earn 82% of what men earn for the exact same jobs. And you might say, how is that legal? Well, the Equal Rights Amendment that was fought for by the first and second wave feminists and passed by Congress in 1972 wasn't ratified by enough states by the deadline, which means that equal rights for women is still not the law of the land. And honestly, those things barely scratch the surface of the enormous challenges women face in our society today. Life in the first century was also quite difficult for women. They were considered the property of their fathers or husbands, married off at an early age, required to bear children, unable to survive without subsistence provided by the male in their household. Sometimes that was even their child. They were looked down upon and subjected to harsh laws that governed their lives. The death of a husband left a woman destitute, hence the many calls throughout the Bible to care for widows in their distress. Women had very little autonomy or control over their lives, and when they took control and asserted their autonomy, it was incredibly dangerous. Men typically responded with violence and cruelty to keep women in their place. So, how did women get what they needed to survive? They often had to risk their safety and their sanity, their lives, to take what they needed or persuade a man to get it for them, which is how women came so much more resourceful than men. Matthew 9 is the story of two women, a 12-year-old daughter of a leader of the synagogue. Mark calls this man Jairus, and a woman who has been suffering from a hemorrhage for 12 years. The daughter lived 12 years as the privileged child of a predominant leader in the community and then became ill. The other woman had suffered for those same 12 years in agony, ostracized and humiliated by the community, and finally mustered up the courage and the grit and determination to take a hold of her healing. As the leader of a prominent synagogue in Myers Park, who now has a 13-year-old daughter, I can relate to Jairus in this story. There are no lengths I would not go to help my daughter if she was in need of healing. There's no mountain I would not climb, or river I would not cross, or money I would not pay, or physician I would not find to help my daughter. So I can feel Jairus's pain as he comes to Jesus in this story, which is why I believe something is missing here. After Jairus plead to Jesus on behalf of his daughter, we never hear from him again. How could that be? We never hear what he thinks about the fact that Jesus has stopped in the middle of healing, going to heal his daughter, to interact with this other woman while his daughter is still dying. We never hear what he felt about his daughter dying in the course of the time that Jesus was busy healing this other woman suffering from hemorrhages. We don't hear his grief. We're never even told how Jairus felt or reacted, and I can't accept that. As a father, I can't accept that. What father in their right mind would have said nothing to Jesus about taking time to heal this other woman? What father would not have advocated more forcefully and furiously to overcome this interruption that cost his daughter's life, to try to save his own daughter's life? Why didn't he say anything to Jesus when the woman came up from behind? I would not have been as quiet as Jairus. I'm not sure that speaks highly of me. And I wish we had a record of a reaction where Jairus expressed himself like a 21st century man would have expressed himself. Possibly where a 21st century man might have mansplained Jesus or the woman who interrupted Jesus. It would make this story feel more human, more real, more authentic. It might sound something like, "Ma'am, excuse me, ma'am. I was here first. I don't know if you noticed that. And I asked Jesus to heal my daughter before you showed up here. And unlike you, my daughter's actually dying. I know you're bleeding and all that, but my daughter's dying. And as you can see, I don't know if you noticed, I'm the leader of a prominent synagogue. I haven't seen you there in a while. And I don't know what you're doing. But you can't come up behind a man in this day and age and touch him without his permission. So if you could just kindly back off so I can get Jesus to my house in time to heal my daughter, and you know, then he can see you later." The fact that we hear nothing like this from Jairus is incredibly strange. Did he stand idly by while this woman swooped up behind Jesus and interrupted his daughter's healing? Was Jairus fuming in silence? Did he say something horrifying that neither Mark or Matthew was willing to record? Herein lies the radical part of the story. Even though Jairus' pleas to Jesus to heal his daughter is what starts this story, Jairus quickly fades into the background until we're left with only the women and Jesus, two daughters in need of healing and the great physician. And here's the crazy thing. As soon as Jairus is out of the picture, Jesus gets busy healing and saves both women's lives, transforming this story of healing into a story of resurrection. It reminds me a lot of what happened at the empty tomb. You know, the women went out at dawn in the morning to anoint the body of their teacher and found nothing, no body. They ran back to find the male disciples like Peter, who ran to the tomb then with them and then left to go home befuddled. But the women lingered, and it's not until the men are out of the picture. Have you heard me yet about this church? Are you listening? It's not until the men are out of the picture that the risen Jesus shows up in full force. It's almost like the resurrection could not happen until the men had gone home and were out of the way. Some of you, the women are laughing. The men are just staring at me. When Reverend Mia McLean was called to be the first woman pastor of the Riverside Church in D.C., someone asked me, "Ben, you've had three associate ministers, women, who have gone on to become the first woman pastor in the history of a Baptist church, Reverend Lauren Eford, Reverend Chrissy Williamson, Reverend Mia McLean." And this person asked me, "How did you help these women to get to that level?" And I said, "Help." They didn't need any help from me. All I did was get out of the way. Amen? Get out of the way. There are times when those of us who identify as men simply need to get out of the way so that miracles can happen, so that healing can happen, so resurrection can happen. Sometimes as men, we need to get out of the way so Jesus can show up and do his thing. Once Jairus was no longer the center of the story, once his privilege was out of the way, Jesus showed up and started healing. So maybe Jairus is a model for us privileged men, his silence. When two or three women are gathered in need of healing, we need to take a step back, decenter ourselves, get out of the way, and patiently wait our turn. Some of you are saying, the men probably, what about Jairus' needs? What about his daughter and what she needed? Jairus got what he needed. Did you notice? His daughter was eventually healed, but not until Jesus attended to the woman with the hemorrhage. Jairus had to wait for Jesus to heal another woman. He had to walk all the way home, hear the flutes playing, see the funeral procession, listen to his family crying loudly in grief, experience the crowd making a commotion, hear people jeering at Jesus. Jairus had to learn his own daughter had died, and yet in the end, he still got what he needed. He just had to wait for somebody else to be healed. He just had to wait to get what he needed. And because he waited, he actually got more than he bargained for. He got more than healing. He got a resurrection, a story to tell, a testimony about his daughter. Part of the reason patriarchy rears its ugly head so often in our lives is that we live today in a hyper-competitive dog-eat-dog world. It teaches us from an early age that there is only so much to go around, and it's every man for themselves. We men tend to think, I've got to get what's mine before you do, or there won't be anything left. It's one of the lies that props up the patriarchy, and we're all victims of this, regardless of our gender. This lie, and we call it scarcity. Scarcity is a patriarchal lie that tells us there is not enough money, land, housing, education, healthcare, not enough love and grace and justice and freedom to go around. The lie of scarcity tells us that we live in a cutthroat society where there is only enough resources for some people, so others are going to have to go without. And this patriarchal lie is so ingrained in our society and in our collective psyche that we have now, many of us have now internalized this as individuals to the point where many people now believe that not only are there not enough resources to go around, but that they as human beings, we as human beings are not enough. Not good enough, not pretty enough, not skinny enough, not funny enough, not sexy enough, not smart enough, strong enough, not young enough, or interesting enough. This patriarchal lie of scarcity has convinced us of the false belief that our world is deficient and that we are deficient as well. But that is a lie. It's a load of baloney. Our world is not deficient. God didn't create it that way. And there's no such thing as deficient people. We serve a God of abundance who created a world of abundance and invited us to live lives of abundance. And while there's not enough for everyone's greed, there is enough for everyone's need. There's always enough to go around, like the feeding of the 5,000, in even leftovers, if we're willing to share. There is enough healing to go around and enough time for everyone to find healing, but there will not be enough if the privileged always get their healing first. If Jesus had ignored the women, ignored the woman who was hemorrhaging because Jairus had got to him first, then only one daughter would have found healing. But Jesus stopped to make time for her and still had time to raise Jairus' daughter. Because there's always enough healing to go around. There's always enough healing for everyone so long as the privileged are willing to take a step back and wait so that others can get their chance. But there's another beauty in this story. It shows us that women don't need to wait around for privileged men to find out about the divine logic of abundance. No. That's why I love the woman in this story with the hemorrhage. She didn't care what was going on with Jairus or that he was a powerful religious man, the head of the synagogue. She'd been bleeding for 12 years, ostracized from society, looked down upon and rejected, yet she had the audacity to believe in herself, to believe that she was enough, that she deserved healing. She had the audacity to believe that her social status should not keep her from finding healing. She had the audacity to believe that touching Jesus was enough to save her. And she didn't wait for Jesus to come to her or for society to make it possible for her. She interrupted the situation. She went to Jesus. She had the audacity to believe that touching even the hem of his garment, just the hem, would be enough to save her. Does anybody have the audacity of this woman? She took a risk. She took a chance. She went on a leap and a prayer. She hoped against all hope. She believed against all unbelief. If she could just touch a string on the end of Jesus' cloak, she would be healed, and her faith was rewarded. Jesus' words to this woman are a powerful, powerful energizing force that eviscerates the lie of scarcity and testifies to the truth that every one of us is enough. He said to the woman, "Take heart, daughter. Your faith has made you well." Jesus called her daughter. He named her as his beloved child. He made her a part of his own family. He included her in the community that had kicked her out. He praised her faith and made her whole because she was willing to interrupt the patriarchy and to come up from behind and take the healing that she needed for herself. And in this patriarchal society that we live, sometimes people will have to come up from behind, through the back door, and around the way to get their healing. And that's just what she did. The woman's audacity and Jesus' response means that no matter what you're going through right now, you are enough. No matter what sickness you have, you are enough. No matter what troubles you have in life, you are enough. No matter what you look like or what you think you look like, You are enough. No matter how you feel about yourself, you are enough. In her book, The Sun and Her Flowers, the Punjabi poet Rupi Kaur says, "The greatest lesson every woman should learn is that since day one, she's already had everything she needs within herself. It's the world that convinced her she did not." In this late pandemic moment, when COVID is still hitting people hard, when women are being disenfranchised again, when our healthcare system is broken, when smartphones are changing all of our brains, when excess screen time is making our children sick, when social media is making our young people depressed and sad, when oppression is bearing down on so many, when we are divided against one another as a society because we'd rather argue with each other about ideology than helping somebody in need, everybody is in need of healing in our society today. Yet, like Jairus, those of us who've always had access to healing need to stand aside and stand back so others can find their way in today. Because it's not just about my healing or your healing. It's about everybody's healing. And everybody can get healing if we prioritize those who are on the outside first. We have a tendency as human beings to feel neglected simply because someone else is getting attention. That's the lie of scarcity eating away at our humanity. Yet inside this story, there is a vision for an alternative community, a family where everybody is enough and everybody gets what they need, a church where everyone can find the healing that they need, a community where there is enough time and attention and love for everyone, a beloved gathering where there is a place for everyone and a role for everyone, young and old, black and white, gay and straight, male and female, trans and non-binary. But in order for us to create that kind of community, people like me, like the Jairuses of the world, who've been the leaders of the church for years, need to step back and prioritize the people who are just showing up in the middle of our story, like the woman who is hemorrhaging, the people coming with an urgent need, and figure out what it means to put their healing first. That's what the church is for. That's what it means to be the church, what it means to be an inclusive community of abundance. It's to put other people first. It's always been to put other people first. Don't look on your own interests, Paul said, but put the interest of others first so you can have the mind of Christ. Christ, who turned the world upside down when he said, "The first shall be last and the last shall be first." Are we brave enough? Are we selfless enough to put the last first and the first last? If we are, then the promise of this story is the same as the promise of the entire Bible from beginning to end. It's the promise of God's abundance. When we are patient enough to prioritize the poor before ourselves, when we are patient enough to elevate people who are suffering the most before ourselves, when we are selfless enough to put the last first and the first last, there will always be enough for the rest of us. There will even be enough for those of us who identify as men. Amen. In fact, there may even be leftovers for us. Because when women have the audacity to interrupt the system, and men have the humility to get out of the way, there is potential for everyone to find healing. When women have the audacity to interrupt the system, and men have the humility to get out of the way, there is potential for everyone to find healing, and even the possibility of resurrection. Amen.